right. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to a post-wet, stormy Northwestern weekend. I'm joined, as always, by Miley Ketterson, my loving daughter.
Okay.
How are you doing, Miley?
Ready for the day to be over. Started it off with a nice big migraine, so
yep.
Ready to...
Welcome to an exhausted night of Husker heat, but we'll get through this, and maybe, you know, we're a little tired and we say some silly, stupid things that actually end up being accidentally hilarious. You never can tell. We're also coming on here after Senior Day weekend. We will talk about that. We've got some pictures of that as well, but why don't we dive in to the unusual sort of shitstorm that, you know, literal shitstorm that Northwestern weekend was. Game one literally gets played, after the big outbreak of tornadoes, or at least one from Lincoln to Omaha since, 1975, and even that one was just from southwest Omaha up through the middle of town before it lifted off. And
was that the one on 72nd Street?
Yeah, I think it touched down around 120th and L, and then ran down L to 72nd, turn left. There were famous pictures of the horses racing at Exarban right by 72nd Street as the tornado went up 72nd. And if the paper I did on it for a weather class I took at UNL myself, if I remember that right, it turned up kind of into the Underwood Fair Acres area before finally lifting off at around Benson at 52nd and Military. But we're not here to talk about tornadoes all night, damn it. We're here to talk about Husker softball and what was played after the tornadoes. And I'll say one last thing, all joking aside, probably the best news was that there were no deaths, no casualties. I believe there were only minor injuries. Didn't even really hear of any life-threatening injuries, so... Let's give the weather people of the world credit, because it sounds like everybody had plenty of warning at least to get out of the way. Not necessarily the trains, but I think the trains took the brunt of it. But no deaths, no serious injuries. So we were lucky there. The Cornhuskers, not so lucky. They played Northwestern and really were looking to win the series realistically or hopefully, if really lucky, get a sweep and make that one last charge up the RPI. It almost couldn't have gone worse. Well, it's probably emotionally it couldn't have gone worse. So the first game, and if anybody read, if anybody read my recap of that game, and thank goodness, because I was looking at it over again and I didn't catch all the mistakes. I was writing that late at night. But Here's my beef, and it was the first sentence in that article, so it's the first thing I'm going to bring up now. It's the absolute just abuse of appealing plays because a runner left early. And here's why. It's not necessarily, we're not saying runners should leave early. You need the rule in there, you need the appeal, but each manager, I believe, each coach has two challenges per game. Now, they like to hang on to these things like grim death earlier in the game, unless they absolutely know for sure that they're going to win the appeal. The easiest ones of those to win are the plays at first, because the run, as long as your runner's just honest with you, they know if they're hit, they know if their foot of theirs hit the bag before the ball hit the fielder's glove. So if they call them out and they know they were clearly there first, you'll see those happen really fast. You'll see them turn around and just nod at the dugout. Manager's right out there before the ball's even back to the pitcher, and they're appealing it. Runner's safe, that sort of thing. Now, the ones nobody's sure about, they're not going to waste one on that until late in the game, or let's say later in the game, when something has happened to, say, tie your team up or put your team behind. You might, on a base hit or anything, you might throw it out there, throw that appeal out there, because what have you got to lose at that point? And maybe somebody stepped off the bag half a step early. Now, to me, there's a certain code of ethics, maybe, that you should, or have somebody confirm to you that runner left early. It's like, nope, they figure, I've got a 50-50 chance, let's just throw it out there. The first ridiculous time I saw it was when Nebraska was playing Penn State. They're up six. Billy Andrews hits that just absolute two-run homer bomb to left field, probably the farthest hit ball I've seen by any team this year. Not only did she hit it as hard as she possibly could, she had about a 25, 30 mile an hour wind in her back to left. So anyway, it ends the game. 10-2, mercy run, Nebraska wins. Wait, here comes the Penn State coach. Hey, it's either that or lose, so why not? Why don't you check that nobody left early on that home run? And they did. They go over and they look at it, and they look at it for a while, and then, nope, home run. You know, do they still win the game? Yeah, but how much of a pisser is that going to be as if somebody stepped off the bag to admire a home run, which affects nothing at all, and if they'd have gone, all right, Billy Andrews, or whoever left the base, whoever's on first, you're out, and Billy, you're back up to bat with the same count. You know, and no harm, no foul there, I guess, and it didn't go that way. Well, Friday night, it happens. Bases loaded. I think it was at Ava Breadwell's on first, and Brooke Andrews is at the plate, and I believe she had a full count, and ball four. So they trot down, they've pushed in a run, they were down 4-2, and now it's 4-3. Great. Up here comes the Northwestern manager out of the dugout because the bases are loaded. There's one out, and they're still loaded. There's one out. Now you're only up one. Well, let's see it. Let's take a chance. I think that Ava Breadwell left the bag a step early on a walk. And so she stepped off the bag a little. You know, the bases are loaded. She's not stealing second because there's someone on second in front of her. There's someone on third in front of her. And I guess I've never seen the bases loaded, everybody steal, try to steal home. And she gets out there. They take a look. Ava Breadwell left first early. You're out. And so runners on second, third. Brooke, you're back up to bat as if the pitch never happened. It's 3-2. So not only is she out, you lose the play too. So Brooke walks, loads the bases back up. Or it was with, yeah, nobody out. So now with one out. Or no, there was one out. So now there's two out. She loads them. Caitlin Caneda comes up for the second time that night, just laces a single the opposite way to left field, scores two of the runs. Brooks at second. She's on first with two out, and then there's an out, and they're out of the inning. Well, how'd you like to be – and she tied it up 4-2. Well, let's go back and say that they actually used a bit of logic to say there's no danger and you shouldn't be able to, you know – appeal the runner leaving early in situations that don't freaking matter if they leave early or not. So what you would have then is base is still loaded, one run in, so it's 4-3, Caneda singles, we've now taken the lead 5-4, and we've got runners on first and second, and another runner in scoring position with one out. And it's just absurd to me that they do that. And it's not just a Husker thing. This is one of those things where everybody hates it, including the managers, but they have to do it because you can't take the chance that you do the right thing, then turn around, then somebody turns around and sticks it to you when they get a chance. So the Northwestern manager hates it, but she's like, I got to try it. You know, Rhonda Revelle hates it, but in the same situation, she's probably going to try it if she thinks of it. What are your thoughts on that? Where do you stand on that silly rule? Feel free to disagree with me.
I mean, I don't really know. I mean, I get it. If you leave early, then, I mean, you're basically breaking the rules, so you should be out. But I don't know. I feel like it's just a touchy rule.
Yeah, and what it is stuff where, you know, I get it. It's not necessarily a dead ball, but when you're appealing something like a home, they stepped off the base on a home run. I think that's got to be a case where, like, we're not going to allow you to appeal because there's just absolute in situations where when everything's played out and you get zero advantage by leading off that base after the fact, like after a home run, you've got zero advantage. You get a free trot around the bases. Bases loaded, you step off a little, and it's a walk. Shouldn't be able to, for me, it's just you shouldn't be able to appeal stuff like that because you've got nowhere to go on a walk. She gains no advantage. I don't know. I'll be curious to see what happens in the off season with this, because I get the feeling nationally a lot of people, like all over softball, are upset that the rules being abused like this. Hey, I'm going to jump in real quick. We have a viewer, Colt Bundy. First time watching the show, I'm a Nebraska fan, but ashamed to say that I don't know as much about Nebraska softball as I should. I'm here to learn. Miley?
We're learning together because, yeah. I mean, this is my first year, I'm ashamed to say, as well, watching Husker softball. So,
yeah, that's the thing. She came to me and she's like, hey, this is the same thing that started your writing career here, though, last summer. Oh. No, but I mean, no, let me finish. Okay. It makes sense, I promise, without being condescending. You texted Dad, hey, I'd like to try writing for Coronation, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you did, and she does great. And so, same thing. I have a girl I coached who played with Miley, who's a coach for Nebraska now. Might have had something to do with it, but Miley maybe she saw the fun I was having doing it. And Miley goes, hey, I'd like to start writing softball. I'm like, what do you know about it? Not a damn thing. Come on aboard. You can be the part of the viewers who are trying to learn. So, Colt Bundy, we've got you here. This is how it started for her. I'll just retell this story real quick. I got to talk to Coach Sipple during the fan day they had before the season, and just stepped up and told her how I knew Liv and how I got into watching softball. And all of a sudden, it's fun. Now I'm just doing it for fun, not just because a former player did it. It was maybe a 1 weekend trip. And Coach Sipple leaned in and kind of gave me a little wink and goes, addictive, isn't it? It's addictive, isn't it, Miley?
Yeah.
Yeah, the games are fast. They're exciting. Holy crap! This team, while they might not be reaching the goals they had set, you know, before the season, but just because of it, what ended up just being a slew of injuries, they're still. You know, I'd put them up there with the most fun teams to watch in college softball this year. Everything goes into the set: comebacks, extra inning victories, walk offs, win, lose. You've seen both ends of the emotions, and I think coaches would tell you that. That's what sports is about, is not just the highs of the victories, but also learning how to deal with the lows of the defeats. And this team's getting a one-season crash course in that. So, Colt, good to have you aboard, bud. Okay, let's cover game two real quick. They got whooped 8-1. So, moving on. It was still like they were up a little bit, and then they blew up in the last two innings, got 6 runs on 6 hits, 3-run homer from Emma Ray in the 7th. And then Emerson Cope, who's been hot with the bat lately, decided to blast a home run and, you know, for an 8-1 loss, just to let them know, we won't quit, you bastards. and so, but yeah, that one was just a whooping. Now that day turned into a doubleheader because they saw bad weather coming Sunday and said, let's play a doubleheader Saturday. Well, what happened? Night 2 of storms rolled in. Yeah, I thought they'd wait it out. They had a doubleheader, nothing to do the next day. I figured, especially knowing there was a flight the next day to catch and that the forecast didn't look good, I thought they'd keep going and just wait till 7:30, 8, 8:30, whatever. Let's get this game in. And something tells me, you know, Northwestern down 5-0 fought that, because that's what happens in game 3. 3.5 innings get played. The Huskers go up 3-0 in the first, tack on 2 more in the bottom of the third. Billy leads off the game with a home run. I see you shaking your head, Miley. Talk to us.
Oh, I was reading the comments.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, we're not going to start a fight in the comments.
But, I mean, it is sort of unfortunate that they didn't wait it out, because they definitely could have. It was done raining by, I don't know, 8 o'clock?
Yeah.
8:30. So they could have waited out. I mean, yes, they were down, but no, they weren't down. I'm thinking of the second game.
Yeah.
They should have definitely waited it out.
Right. And but, I will tell you, after Sunday's experience, without going into all of that yet, but we're coming right up on it, that field dries off incredibly fast.
It's not real grass, is it? No.
Yeah, they got the turf, but even the infield, like nobody's walking around with mud on their shoes after all that. But anyway, that field would have been ready, and the outfield was fine. So anyway, they decide to, both the men and the women decide, the men get suspended too against Iowa, and they're up 8-1. And they decide, let's play it again at 11 the next morning. And I'm looking and I'm like, and it starts, forecast is just getting worse and worse as the night goes on, to where it's 100% chance of thunderstorms from 10 to 11, coming down to like 90 from 11 to 12, 90%, 11 to 12. It tapered off to where it was still though like 60, 70, 80% chance of thunderstorms right when they've decided to reschedule the game. I mean, you know, do it at 9 in the morning or do it at 1 in the afternoon. Yeah. But for crying out loud, you know, don't just throw it right in the middle of something that's just supposed to be a deluge anyway. So anyhow, we were having our Meet the Corn Nation guys, and one guy, James Broadman, Boardman, I believe, he comes into John's show a lot and comments. So it was nice to put a face to that name. But yeah, we had a fine old time. We had giant tents, and so we, you know, we were staying plenty dry, and it was just like one wave after another, and then you kept getting lightning warnings. And they're the lightning strikes that they can just detect in the sky with the instruments, because we didn't see so much as a flash in the sky the whole time, but they can detect. So we got put on a 30, another, like what was going on Friday night here? Well, there's like 30 minute delay, restarting the clock. And so that they had two clock restarts. Then it just kept raining and raining and raining. And I think it was at about a little before quarter to two, they announced the men's game will start at like 2:45, and the women's game has been canceled, but we will do senior day. So people were wondering, well, what kind of Title IX crap is this? Why are you telling the women they can't play and the guys they can? Semi-logical explanation for that. The Northwestern had a flight. They're just on regular airline flight, and so they have a time where the game's got to get done, and if it's finishing by then, if they've got the seven innings required in or the five innings required in for softball, great. If not, go screw. But either way, you know, they're not holding a flight for them.
Lisa Bluter would have been really pissed.
Lisa Bluter, yes, these were not Big Ten protocols, folks. This was bullshit. We have a flight to catch. We're getting these on Big Ten protocols. I think T-shirts next year with her like crinkled up angry face on it, and Iowa fans will love that. Worshippers. So that's why the game didn't get played.
Guessing Iowa just busting or something.
Yes, and okay. Yeah, but the Iowa baseball coming from Iowa City. Now here's the thing: the basketball women get to take a flight, but the baseball men take a bus. Hey, it's your charter. That driver's getting paid one way or another, so he'll sit around and wait.
So
the men did play. They ended up, you know, beating the brakes off them in the first game. After I went to the senior day and took some photos and talked to some people, I skittered over and watched the end of that first game, and then I took off. And you're not sticking around for the second game, but I'm like, guys, I took off at 9:30 this morning. It's about 4:15. I've been here, and most of it I just spent standing up under a tent listening to the rain throw down, and then realizing we didn't have ice, so I had to enjoy my pregame refreshments mixing themselves lukewarm. Hey, we're tough guys. We adapt when we have to. We're not these COVID weenies that want to storm Governor's Mansion because we can't go eat at the Cheesecake Factory. My God, we stick it out and we drink our sodas.
We drink hot beverages.
So anyway, the part of that deal was, and Miley was a little mad about that because it takes a home run off the board for Billy Andrews. When you cancel the game, the stats don't count either. So, you know, here are their bats coming alive and they're not going to get any credit for it. Let's see. Yeah. Let's talk about the standings and kind of save senior day for last so we can finish on a happy note with this group. So the Big Ten standings, if you couldn't tell tonight, I was kind of doing everything last minute, so I didn't have a chance to make a Big Ten standings graphic or anything. But now those standings are just in all kinds of a mess for us going into the final weekend, because we really, really, it's looking like it's a pretty solid bet. If we're going to the NCAAs, we have got to pull off some upsets and win the Big Ten tournament. Yeah. Now, can we beat these teams? Yes.
If we don't shoot ourselves in the foot, yes.
Yes. If they don't start floating their strike zones around again, yes, which they also did in the first game as well.
If it does rain, yes.
If it does rain, yeah. And here's the thing, though.
Because Illinois, we definitely would have won that game.
And, yeah, so that's – go ahead. That's the point I was making. Go roll with that.
Yeah, I mean, that I'm not saying the Illinois game that got snowed out, rained out, whatever, would have been a definite win. But I have a feeling they would have won that game And then we were beating Northwestern in that last game this past weekend. And so that's two wins we could have had. That's really going to come back and bite us. So,
well, you know what? I'm going to come right out and say it. We would have won both those games. Yeah. Illinois, we'd just batted around twice, scored, 15 runs in an inning to mercy run them after, about the fifth by just some ridiculous score of 16-3 or something like that. So I'm thinking we could have beaten Illinois again.
Yeah.
And then we had, like you said, we had a 5-0 run, lead on Northwestern. So here's what the standings are now. Michigan and Northwestern are in a tie for first because Northwestern's played two fewer games. Michigan is 17-3. Northwestern is 16-2. But that'll put Northwestern in the one spot. If it ended today, I should say, because they would have the higher winning percentage and one less win. Now next comes Rutgers, who we beat 2 out of 3 at 12-8. And then we have Minnesota at 11-8, one game short themselves, but on the right side of it. Then we have so that's third and fourth. Then we have a four-way tie for fifth with Indiana, Penn State, Purdue, all at 11-9, and Nebraska at 10-8. Now, if there's good news, bad news, if the season ended today, we're in fifth because we have the higher winning percentage and fewer losses. But we'd still just be fifth, and we'd be playing that extra game. We'd be playing that extra day. We need to get to fourth, which a sweep of Minnesota should do it, and here's why. That would put us at 13-8. Rutgers is 12-8 playing Penn State, so I'm not thinking they're going to do well in that. I wouldn't be surprised to see Nemeth pitch all three of those games because here's Penn State, like us, trying to get into that top four. Now, Minnesota's 11-8, so if we win that series, we jump ahead of them. So we just need to worry about getting ahead of Indiana, Penn State, and Purdue for that fourth spot. Penn State's got one. They've got two more games, but one more loss. So it's a little bit of an advantage to be missing a couple of those games, but not an advantage. But at least we'd still have that tiebreaker as far as the records. Now, so Rutgers is playing Penn State. Minnesota's playing us. So Penn State and us kind of hold our own destiny. If we take care of business this weekend, one of us is finishing third, one of us is finishing fourth, and we're knocking Rutgers and Minnesota back. And Indiana's playing Northwestern. I don't think that's going to help them. Penn State, like I said, playing Rutgers. And then you have Purdue playing Michigan State, and they're 11-9, and Michigan State's at the bottom of the sharing bottom of the conference honors with Iowa currently. So Purdue could sweep that. And if the two of us go 2-1, one of us out of Penn State and Nebraska might get bounced back to fifth. So Purdue's kind of the crap in the ointment right now.
Okay, so I have a question.
Yes, fire away.
So in volleyball, they play each team once and then some of them twice. In softball, why don't we play every team in the Big Ten?
Same reason. There's just not enough weekends for everybody to play everybody. Yeah. Left out of that mix is we didn't play Purdue, we didn't play Indiana this year.
And Michigan State.
And those are all, instead, we got Michigan, Northwestern, Rutgers, yeah. Penn State. We played probably the toughest conference schedule. Hey, what a shock. It's not just football. They put a boot up our ass with these.
Does Ohio State not have a team then?
They do. They're down below.
Oh, they're way down there.
That's who Michigan is playing this weekend.
Gotcha.
So what we need is for Ohio State to roll into Michigan, or I don't even know where they're playing, and win a game or two just out of that rivalry just to piss off Michigan. Because I feel that's like something. If we had our pick of who do we want finishing higher, Michigan or Northwestern, I mean, the softball women haven't done anything creepy like naked whatever, hazing and stuff. So they're probably fine young ladies. I'd rather see them win over Michigan. Yeah. But anyway, that's the mess in the conference right now. So this is going to be a real weekend of everybody's going to be checking the other scores this weekend and doing it day by day. And I haven't even looked at the weather yet. I'll look at that on Thursday or Friday when I'm doing the weekly preview. who knows, it might be another crap show, and maybe the ultimate us getting bounced out of the top four is getting stormed out of two more games.
Yeah.
Who knows, against, you know, an inferior opponent. Now, they're higher in the standings. Why did I call Minnesota inferior? Okay. This last weekend brought us to 27-21 on the year, 10-8 in the conference, and then number 50 in the RPI. We only dropped one spot.
One, yeah.
But then our strength of schedule is 43, so that'll look good when they're selecting. And when it's coming down to those final spots, if we can, you know, move up a little this weekend. Minnesota, they've had it fair. Well, let's see. 2 weekends ago, they played Rutgers, lost 2 out of 3 to the team we beat 2 out of 3, and then they swept Iowa, and that's what moved them up to third. But their RPI right now currently is 75. They're not going dancing. They are 26-22 and 11-8 in the conference. Due to their weird website, I don't have Minnesota stat previews, so we cut a few minutes out of the show tonight there, didn't we? Don't worry. Check the weekly article on. It'll probably be Friday early afternoon. There'll be a whole thing on the players of theirs to watch, so we won't leave you. What's that?
I said you're good.
Oh yeah. Anyway, jerk. All right.
You're good at those. I was being nice.
That's true. You were.
Yeah. What?
I'm gonna have another.
Talk
for a minute about how bad I am. I'm going to take another sip of Propel. My mouth.
Well, he just called me a jerk for giving him a compliment. So, I mean, that wasn't really that nice.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's go welcome. I'm sorry?
So you're welcome.
Okay, you're welcome. Thank you. All right, let's talk about... Thank you. Can I talk now?
No.
Talk now, please.
No.
Okay, let's talk about Senior Day, because that actually was pretty fun. I got to scoot out from under my tent when it stopped raining. Went over. They had a little presentation. I'll just show some shots while we talk about it a little. There's the Andrews family. God bless whoever the young lady is. They had a player or two. At each station, they lined up the girls around the infield, as you'll see, with their big Senior Day photos, and the families got to come out. And here were the Andrews sisters together. That's Brooke Andrews on the far left watching the presentation on the scoreboard. And behind this Husker on the right, who, you know, we won't embarrass anybody by identifying him, but it, through no fault of her own, she never really stepped out of Billy's way. I tried to get Billy in the shot there, and it just wasn't happening. But what they were doing there was Rhonda Revell wrote out and then recorded a nice something about each one of her seniors, and it really was good stuff. She was just talking about the best stuff she remembers about them, whether that was on the field, the dugout, the locker room. She just seemed to be just pointing out the best things about them and not necessarily softball. And you could tell that you know, players were getting emotional. People in the stands were getting emotional. It was a really neat thing to see.
I said, wonder what that's like.
Okay. Anyway, this isn't the Miley show.
I wasn't trying to make it.
Okay. But anyway, here's a couple more shots. I believe that's Sydney Gray there with her family. And then there's... Emerson and Jordy Ball out there with Sarah Harness hugging her family. And then right there they are watching the stuff on the scoreboard again. There's Kaylin Kenny. We'll take a moment here. The season's far from over. There's still a potential for miracles out there. And, you know, it can happen. We talk about how tough it's going to be. That doesn't mean impossible. Look, I just want to take a minute for Kaylin Kenny. You know, we've talked about Billy Andrews all year. We'll talk about her some more. Sydney's been, you know, Big Ten Player of the Week twice this year. But Kaylin Kenny misses last year, and they only had 3 pitchers last year. She was one of them about 8 games in while they're on the tournament tour. She has a hand injury, breaks something. She's done for the year and maybe pitched a few innings. And even the year before, she was just kind of an emergency pitcher that came in now and then. And she goes from that to, I don't have it in front of me, but she has thrown the lion's share of the innings. I think she's gotten about 30 of their decisions this year and was roughed up early in the year, was getting beat up a lot. just kept competing, learning from Coach Revelle, Coach Sipple, Coach Farrell, Coach Wallace, your grad assistant Coach Wallace, having all those former pitchers on staff. And by the end of the year, she'd become the hammer. She'd become their go-to pitcher. It was her there, they were going to put in against Bridget Nemeth and against Nurkowski from Michigan. And so she ended up just having a hell of a year. It may not end in the College World Series or anything like that, but after the disappointment of last season, missing out on an NCAA, run, to the final against Oklahoma State and most of the season, I was just really happy to see, she's just such a neat girl. So happy to see her, have her season end and on a good note. And then I did sneak in a couple of pictures there. There's Coach Revelle and Coach Sipple just kind of hanging at the back there, by the net, and just taking it all in. We interviewed, right? A bunch of us interviewed Coach Revelle. I talked to Coach Sipple a little bit. And this is a very special senior class for them. They had some issues a few years ago and went through some tough times before turning it around to win the Big Ten tournament. This is, I believe, the last class of players out of that group that kind of came out of a bad place and have turned this into a pretty magical few years for the Huskers. Even this year, if they don't go to the NCAAs, like I said, we're going to remember these guys as being, just being so much fun to watch this year. Just come back when, I think they've come back to win in four or five games where they were down going into the seventh inning. And that's more than the last something like 13 years combined, winning games trailing in the seventh. So that's a fun team to watch. Here they are. They were all grouped up after introducing them all. Got a nice shot. That gives you an idea of kind of, this is the weather clearing up this weekend in Lincoln, Nebraska, for crying out loud. Here's the girls. There you get with like the seniors behind their portraits and the team all in. And then after that, they all yelled for the coaches to get in. And it was like the coaches were just back taking it all them, wanting it to be their moment. And for the players, it's like trying to pull teeth. Get over here. We want you in this picture. And they're grabbing as coaches, assistant coaches, grad assistant coaches, trainers. They wanted everybody there to celebrate. It's a neat thing. I'm glad I got to be on the field and be a part of it. And I'm telling you what, I'm not they're not done. They've been too good at coming through when you give up on them, and people have given up on them again and again this year. Because myself included, I'm like, well, this one's about done. I'll start writing the article.
That was me for Rutgers. Yeah.
Yep. An inning or two goes by, and then you're delete. Let's start it again. The Huskers aren't letting me write their story. That should be their motto. The Huskers didn't let anybody write their story. It was their story until they decided it was won or lost, and it was a lot of fun. What do you think?
Yeah, it's been a fun first season to watch. I mean, I didn't really know what to expect. There was the big hype around the team because Jordy Ball goes out right away at the first game of the season. So then it went to like, okay, what's going to happen now? So it's been really special to see them not quit and fight till the very end.
Yeah, and I'll say this just from observing Jordy Ball all season, is she became no less a member of that team while recovering from a knee injury. She is in uniform every game. I can see her over there. What it looks like is charting pitches for the coaches. You saw her out there at field day. She's just one of the other teammates supporting the seniors. And she's got 2 years left, so guess who else's story isn't done? And she's already said she intends to play them both. So we're Jordy will have her moment. Coaches could never say this. I never would say anything like that when I was a coach. As a writer, and damn it, I'm a fan too, and I don't care. It's always going to bug me a little about what could have been, especially the way the bats were this year. This team was one of the best hitting teams in the country. And God bless the pitchers. I mean, you saw Sarah Harness and Kaylin, who I already talked about, go from pitchers that, as it played out, were probably going to be the third and fourth starters on the team, mostly pitching in relief. And they did not shy away from, guess what, you guys are the two top two pitchers now. Now, Sarah had experience with that last year, Kaylin Kenny, not even anything close to that. So, you know, I'm not trying to cast any aspersions on them. Their competitiveness was unmatched. Go ahead.
If Alinsky would have stayed healthy too, I mean.
Yep, she.
It would have really helped, but yeah, with how good our bats were this year, it just sucks that we were sort of handcuffed when it came to pitching.
Right.
Since we lost the top two pitchers.
And as Rhonda said, this was her 32nd year as head coach of the Huskers softball team. And she said this is the biggest injury problem she ever dealt with. Mm-hmm. And just to put it in percentages for you, 25% of the roster was lost for the season. They had 24, scholarship walk-on. They probably have some partial scholarships out there that they work with. But 24 roster girls, 6 down for the year. That included what ended up being, their top two pitchers. Two starting outfielders, or at least two outfielders that would have been in the starting rotation. So, it's like that. You've lost 4 huge parts of that team, and they never stopped fighting. That can close the book on the softball talk for this evening as we get ready for Minnesota. I'm sure after whatever ends up being the end of the season, the show after that, we'll talk about it a lot more. But for Senior Day, just wanted to point out what a really special group of girls that was, and still is. That's like that season's not over yet. Haven't said goodbye just yet.
Yeah.
So what else happened though this weekend? We had the spring game. We should get to put our 2 cents in about that.
I went to the spring game.
How was it?
It was good. I mean, there was a lot of people there for it being a spring game. I mean, the top rows of the North and South stadiums were empty, but I mean, I think we had the 4th most attendance in the NCAA for spring game this year, something like that, around there. So
that's outrageous. We used to lead that. We need to get 89,000 people in those seats again.
All right. But I mean, Dylan Riola looked really good. Just as we expected. He's going to be our starter. I think we can say that.
I wrote our spring game recap, and some others I see saying, well, maybe it'd be good if we got an experienced quarterback in the pool, or look at Heinrich Harburg out there, and maybe we need a senior to start the first few games. These freshmen make mistakes. Okay, I'm going to tell you this right now. Now, Harburg's mechanics, here's the thing, not slamming Harburg. I just cheered for him like crazy last year because here's a guy who'd never had a quarterback coach in his life until this spring. When we got Glenn Thomas and assigned a quarterback's coach, he had no quarterback's coach rules first year. Rule caught that mistake, fixed it. Nobody's perfect. I just want to see guys learn and get smarter. Rule did that. And then he was just basically ignored the previous 2 years. So I thought he battled, fought, and now I always wondered, he's got a strong arm. What can we do if somebody actually teaches him a little something? I'm not to insult, his high school coaches, but I'm guessing none of them was just a quarterback's mechanic, throwing mechanics expert.
He went to Kearney Catholic, so I mean, it was a Class C school in Nebraska. Class C schools don't get, all these amazing coaches at them. So,
Ed, here's the thing: his mechanics looked improved, but honestly, I think they dropped about 3 interceptions he threw out there, and the touchdown he threw to Barney was underthrown. And if you didn't have like the walk-on burn, just with his back to everything, somebody just turns around and picks it now. And then Barney made a nice play on that catch, but I don't see where it's improved enough to go, we throw him in because there's not anybody better. No. I thought Danny Kalen looked good, but he was a little shaky early. Danny Kalen threw an interception. Now he was hitting his short stuff very well for the rest. I think he completed about, 7 out of his last 8 or 8 out of his last 9. But when it came to Dylan Riola, that arm, and it's not just to start with, that arm is on a different level, not just with strength, but accuracy. How many longer throws did you see where he just zipped it there and on stride?
Like Patrick Mahomes out there, I mean, with his throwing motion.
Yeah, he does the little Mahomes sidearm thing. And I don't have we've just seen so many people do it horribly the last few years at Nebraska that it's okay when Mahomes does it. And yeah. his normal deep throwing motion is fine, and he'll throw it like 45 yards, and it's just a flick of the wrist. Like, it looks like, you know, as much effort as he puts into a screen pass.
Needle so well, too.
Yeah, he threaded like that two-point conversion where it's,
yeah.
You know, it's short throws, it's long throws. And then here's the other thing is this is a kid who, by all accounts, is dragging everybody to workouts. He's just like kind of the natural-born leader type. And if you watched him between plays, you know, he's goofing around after touchdowns and having fun like a kid on the sidelines. But you watch him between plays, and he's over, he's signaling to the sideline, and just looked like he doesn't have a care in the world. He's just looking around like a guy who knows all his reads, knows all his options, and just calm on the field. And one of the stories I read about him was, you know, each position has its own playbook. And he asked for everybody's playbook on offense so he can memorize them all so they can come to him in the huddles when they have questions. He does not have the composure, the body language, and all that of an 18-year-old. He looks like a guy who's just in command, and he's not struggling to do it. He's just gotten so used to it. It's coming naturally, and it's like when it's just like a second, you know, consciousness to him or whatever. It's not like they're trying to think too much, and he's just out there. Nope, I got my guy zipped. It was fun seeing him work with Fadone. He hits that Ja'Cory Barney from Miami a few times. Well, I guess they're roommates. Always good to have your roommate. Last year, weren't Fadone? I believe Fadone and Harburg were roommates and hooked up a little bit. But yeah, And I thought, here's the thing: is it's to the point now where somebody gets hurt this year. To me, it's not oh God, we got to put Sims in, you know, type of thing. For Chuba. Chuba ended up being all right, but all we had before the first time were the memories of the year before where Chuba couldn't get out of his own way. Yeah. And I don't think I've ever seen a quarterback room flip to three guys now. That I feel two of them I feel a lot better than I felt about the two backups last year. Mm-hmm. And I still think Kalen looks like a guy. He's got some nice accuracy. He's got a nice motion. Now, he just doesn't have the same arm. That's not his fault. I wouldn't mind a guy who's short and active, who can throw the short and medium balls with accuracy. But he also made a couple. There's a couple of freshman mistakes by him. And he's in a place, though, where here Rayola can play 3 years, enter the draft, and Kalen redshirts. And then he's got 2 years left after Rayola's last two to take over if he can. We won't talk about that. We're going to get Dayton Rayola, too. But we don't want you to worry about that. We don't want you to worry about that, Daniel.
Kimmel. Not
we,
yet.
We do love you. And I wish this kid the best. I wish Harburg the best. But I just think you have to be coming from a weird thing where you don't like the hype of Rayola, or you prefer the you know, Nebraska-born guys to get a better shot at the job. It's like we just want the best guy.
Yeah, and exactly. I mean, it would be cool to see a Nebraska-born, but if he's not the best, he's not the best, and he shouldn't be out there.
Right. And if he comes back in the fall and Rayola has trouble and it is Daniel Kalen, I'm not going to go, hey, throw him in there anyway. It's like, hey, yeah. Kalen, he's the one that looks most ready to do this job. Put him out there. But thought we'd have a little fun talking football. I don't see. Let's see if we. Oh, we did get. Let's check the comments before we go. James Boardman, there he is, up in Omaha watching the Huskers losing to Creighton. Dropping in during a break to say hi. Soggy Sunday was fun. Well, it was fun. It was fun meeting you, James. It was nice to put name to the face if you're still there. If not, I'm sure we'll run into each other in one of these. Let's see what good old Connor Smith. He decided to give Colt Bundy a little hard time. Not a true Husker fan until you get into bowling. I think bowling might have been one of the first things somebody covered for the Huskers at Corn Nation before we started getting access to all sports. So go bowling. We have a very good bowling team.
Bowling seems good, yeah.
Connor also says, Heinrich Heisenberg looking nice. Yes, he did. He looks like a much smoother quarterback right now, 100%. Mm-hmm. Highlander Gun, receivers look good. They did. As it turns out, if you can get the ball to these guys, we got ourselves some playmakers. Jalen Lloyd just, you know, he was the only two receivers to have three touchdowns of over 50 yards. Marvin Harrison Jr., Jalen Lloyd. caught three passes, all three of them for touchdowns, all three over 50 yards. Yep, there it is. Lloyd is J.D. Spielman 2.0. Connor, he might be better than J.D. Spielman, but we'll see how it plays out. Ja'Cory Barney caught a touchdown pass. He caught several passes, ran a kickoff back 79 yards before getting tackled by his own team. Yeah. Only it wasn't his teammate. It was the kicker, but he's wearing the gray jersey. And poor old freshman Ja'Cory Barney. Don't you have enough to worry about as a freshman trying to impress, and then you think the guy's on your team and you get taken out by the kicker? So he didn't stop there. Barney picked up a ball in the end zone on a kickoff, fiddled with it for a little bit, for more than a little bit, and then decided, this is it. I'm going to have my springtime Heisman moment and run this thing out of the end zone. And he ran it to about the three or the four. That's when Matt Rhule was hanging up in the Big Ten broadcasting booth, and you heard him just clearly say something like, what was he thinking? And Kenny Bell's just over there laughing his head off. It was good to see Kenny Bell up there. Highlander Gun asks us, is Sims still there? No, Sims entered the portal right after the season ended. I have a feeling that's one of those times you enter the portal with the coach's hands square in your back, being told you've taken your last snap. And if you don't, we're just going to cut you, but continue your schooling here. That's one thing that Rhule can do up until the end of the spring. I think it's like they have this 16-month or 18-month period when a new coach gets a job where he could drop any scholarship players from the roster that he wants. And if they don't enter the portal, they can keep it. It won't count against the school. They can keep their scholarship and keep working towards their degree. So I have a feeling that would have been his offer. The last I heard, he was talking to Arizona State.
I saw that too.
I don't know that they're talking back, but Jeff, I got to meet Jeff Sims and interview him at the Big Ten Media Days. He was every bit the quarterback you wanted, except when it came time to take the field. This guy is charismatic. He's smart. He's funny. He gives off a great leadership vibe. And hey, remember, he was wearing one of the single-digit teammates voted to the toughest guys on the team. So he's not leaving Lincoln with nothing. He's leaving Lincoln with nothing from respect, but his teammates and true fans, as far as I'm concerned.
I think his downfalls is he was always on O Street every weekend when they weren't playing.
Was?
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah, that's a.
If you look at his previous stats, his downfall was before he ever saw O Street. He's just turnover prone, and sometimes
I knew he was at Georgia Tech.
Poor guy. Good guy though. But it's like won't miss his play. But from what I heard from the team, I miss him being around the team. He was a good guy to have around. So I believe that is all we got for tonight. We got over 50 minutes, but. That's okay. I wanted to chat about senior day a little bit. I'm going to miss those seniors. That group was sophomores the first time I ever covered the team, and they were just a bunch of pistols back then. So we'll see them at Minnesota. I'm not going to be at Minnesota. We'll see them playing against Minnesota this weekend. We'll see where they end up for the Big Ten tournament, and it's my plan to hit Iowa City for that EU. So night.
Cleanse yourself before you came back.
Yeah, I know. It's a gross place. All right, we'll let Highlander Gun give us what is turning into our sign-off each night with a little GBR Go Big Red. Everybody have a fantastic week and weekend. I'll have the weekly preview up on probably Friday midday, and then we get going Friday night up in Minnesota, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Hey, the weather can't be worse up there, can it?
Hope not.
we'll get with that meteorologist brother of yours and see what's going on.
He's so your that's son. It.
Miley, thanks for being on as always. As much as we yelled at each other, I couldn't enjoy this more. GBR, go Big Red, everybody. Say goodnight, Miley.
Good night.
Good night, everybody. See you next week, hopefully with some good news.
With three games played.
Three games played. Yeah, three games played, three wins. Go Big Red. Good night, everybody.